Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, Music in the South Bay. On May 27th, 2015, voted Best Local Radio Show in the Daily Breeze Reader Choice Poll 2014, and we're definitely looking for a repeat. We have to check those results, but they're in. We will know soon. Live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. That's what we do here in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and it's a beautiful place to do just that. It also is a beautiful place to listen to live music. I'm your host, Joe Terry, and the South Bay Show is brought to you by Viridian, the official solar energy provider for the South Bay. Working with SolarCity, Viridian provides an opportunity for a family to make a significant impact on the carbon footprint of our society by installing solar energy on their home. Free installation, free monitoring, and free repairs for the life of the lease, 20 years, and of course 20 years at one low rate for electricity, regardless of what energy prices do in general. Live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. That's what we intend to do with Viridian. For the best value in solar, please visit solar.greenenergyfire.com. That's solar, S-O-L-A-R, dot greenenergyfire.com. There's sun in our veins. And of course, today we are featuring the music and the performances coming up this coming Friday, the 29th, at the Beach Cities Symphony Orchestra. We have with us Barry Brisk. Barry Brisk, the conductor. Barry first conducted in public at the age of 14 when he performed selections from South Pacific at his graduation from Webster Junior High School in West Los Angeles. As a student, he has also conducted the orchestras at University High School, Mount St. Mary's College, and the University of Music, formerly Academy of Music, in Vienna, Austria, where he studied with the prominent conductor, teacher Hans Swarovski. Professionally, Brisk has conducted many orchestras in Southern California, as well as in Mexico and Austria. Maestro Brisk has been the music director of the Beach City Symphony since 1994 and is particularly proud of having expanded the orchestra's repertoire. He has conducted works by more than 80 composers, more than a dozen of whom are still living. Today, we are talking about the Artists of the Future concert this coming Friday, May 29th. And we really, really hope that you'll all come out for this concert. Of course, it's a free concert at the El Camino College Marseille Auditorium. And Maestro Brisk, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Joe. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you so much. And I have to apologize to you, Maestro, and the audience. We were going to have this show on Monday, but that did not happen. And I'm so pleased that we're doing this today, because I want to give people just a taste of what they might experience, and just the idea. I'm still excited about it, giddy about the fact that we have symphony music, live symphony orchestra music in our own backyard right here in the South Bay. Barry, I'm still excited about it. Are you still excited about it?
Of course, I'm involved in it. I have to go to all the rehearsals. I have to is the wrong expression. I look forward to conducting the rehearsals and the concert. So this week, for instance, we have rehearsals Wednesday night and Thursday night, and the concert is Friday night. So that's always an exciting thing, you know, to get the adrenaline rushing. And then we have four talented young student soloists with us this evening for the rehearsal and the concert on Friday night. So that's always something to, you know, keep you young at heart.
Right. And it has been a magical season. This year has been a great season. But this is always one of my favorite concerts, actually, because it brings that extra bit of electricity in the air. You see the parents and the cousins and the uncles and all of the supporters for these young artists. So we're going to talk about each individual artist. We're also going to play a bit of the pieces that they're going to be playing. So let's talk about this as a series, though. When did you start the Artists of the Future series?
Well, it predates me.
Oh.
This is now the end of my 20th year, and it was already in place when I became music director. So it goes back at least 30 years altogether.
Oh, I see.
Yes. Okay. Right. So it's not a new thing.
Okay. Well, let's get into it right away. Let's start with artist number one. Who are we talking about?
Okay. Why don't I talk about Julia Jorgensen?
Mm-hmm.
She's the one piano soloist on the concert tonight. And what's interesting, not just about her, but in her own background, is that this performance has particular significance because her mother performed in the same capacity with the Beach City Symphony at the same age over 30 years ago. So, and she's 15 now, Julia is, so we don't have to figure out how old her mother is, but so this is two generations in a row. I'm not sure if that's happened before. I've had siblings do it, but this is a very charming little thing that's happening here.
Right. Wow.
And she's playing a piece that is really quite charming, but doesn't get played very much. It's variations on the theme of Paganini by the Polish composer Witold Lutosławski.
Hmm.
Now, Lutosławski died I don't remember exactly, it's somewhere in the 1990s. Mm-hmm. He's a very distinguished Polish composer, and he did a lot of work with the Los Angeles Philharmonic. I saw him conduct and heard his music there on a number of occasions.
Mm.
He tended to be a rather modern composer, a little onto the avant-garde side, a little bit sort of cutting edge.
Mm.
But this piece was written in 1941. Mm. Now, he used the famous theme by Paganini, which also has variations by Brahms and by Rachmaninoff, in his famous variations on a theme of Paganini. In that period, 1941, we have to go back to the Second World War. Poland was under occupation since September of 1939, so they had banned a lot of concerts. And what Lutosławski and a friend of his did, they would go to cafes and play piano duets, whether it was Beethoven or Brahms or something like that, just to earn a living,
mm-hmm.
Aside from the fact that they enjoyed it, but you have to eat. And so for this occasion, or this kind of work, he wrote a piece for piano forehand, or maybe it was two pianos. So he and his friend Panufnik could play this together. So that was 1941 when he wrote it. And it's very traditional. It follows the pattern of Paganini's own variations on this caprice. It's caprice number 24 from his 24 caprices for solo violin.
Hmm.
So it's a very traditional sort of a thing. And then somewhere around in the 1970s, he was invited to by the Polish pianist Alicia Blumenthal. He was invited to orchestrate it and turn it into, not exactly a concerto, but a mm-hmm. piece for piano and orchestra. So that came from the 1970s, and it's only 9 minutes long. That's why we don't think of it as a concerto. And it was first performed in, of all places, Miami, Florida.
Oh.
So,
it's very popular.
Right, as a piano piece. Oh, it's a lovely piece, but you don't really hear it done that much. I don't know why, because it's very accessible. The audience will love it. The theme from Paganini is very famous, but there it is. So, and Julia does a very lovely job of playing it. So that's, shall we say, our first soloist that I will mention tonight. Although on the program, she's the second performer.
Mm-hmm. Lutosławski, Variations on a Theme of Paganini. Yeah, it's a very interesting piece. Let's hear a bit of it.
Good.
All right, here we go. Just a bit of this variation on themes of, or a theme of Paganini. I think.
Oh, definitely. The pianist, Julia, had to really practice to get this down, but all of them learn it far enough in advance that they have it down.
Right.
The contest itself that these four people have won took place like the last week of January or the first week of February.
Mm-hmm.
So they had it mastered 5 months ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there's no... There's never been a question of them coming prepared. Any soloist we've had over the past 20 years, they've always been prepared by the time they come to the first rehearsal.
Right, because they are the winners.
That's right, exactly.
Yes. Yeah. This is wonderful. This is going to be, just for people that don't know, if anyone doesn't know, but apparently there are some people, Barry, that don't know that these concerts are free to the public.
Right.
Free admission this coming Friday. And if they arrive early, you have something special for them if they get there at 7:30, right?
Right. I do a pre-concert lecture where I talk about all the five different pieces of music that we're going to be playing in the course of the evening, and throw in whatever other little anecdotes I come up with that is relevant to the concert. Right?
Yes, right. And we'll try not to give away too much today, but it's always fascinating to hear your talk about the pieces before the pieces, and that was one of the things that really encouraged me years ago to want to get you on the radio, because I felt it was so fascinating to talk about the pieces before people went and actually heard them.
Oh, yes. I mean, there's nothing quite as nice as being informed. So,
right.
You know, you go there and you have an idea of what's coming, because there's, of course, the printed, our program book, which is printed, also has descriptions by other people of these pieces, but it's something else when you hear a verbal thing right in front of you. It's much more personal that way,
right.
You know. It's like taking a museum tour. You can walk through by yourself and read all the little descriptions of the paintings or the other objects, but it's something else if you happen to be there with somebody who's very knowledgeable and can explain it to you. It makes
right.
for a different experience.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, so who is our second soloist that we'd like to talk about?
Well, actually, in one case, we get two soloists, a young man, Justin Cheng,
yes.
and a young lady, Jessica Lee. They are both playing the same piece, the Saint-Saëns Cello Concerto in A minor, the third section of it, or the third movement.
Yes.
Two very talented young people. Justin is 15 years old, and he goes to South High School in Torrance. Mm-hmm. And Jessica is only 12, and she attends Ridgecrest Intermediate School, which is also somewhere in the South Bay. I'm not sure exactly which city it's in.
Right.
So they're both very talented young people.
Mm-hmm. But 12 is
right.
Is that the youngest soloist you've ever had?
No. Actually, on the same concert, the one person we haven't talked about yet, he's only 10.
Wow, okay.
And if I remember correctly, like 15 years ago, we actually had an 8 or 9 year old play something.
Okay.
And they were always good.
Yeah.
That's the interesting, that because they won the contest, you know.
Right.
Now, to come back to Jessica Lee for a moment, last year she won the Al Chavez Memorial Scholarship, which is awarded by the Beach City Symphony.
Mm.
See, we have a contest in September, which is the results of which are not a performance. We give a $500 scholarship, one in string instruments and the other one for wind instruments, and these are for people who are in middle school.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so she won that last year,
mm-hmm.
Which is kind of an interesting thing. And the other fellow, Justin Cheng, also won it a different year.
Oh.
So rather amusing.
Yeah.
So we try to be, I can't think of a good word, supportive of young players,
right.
of young people. So
right.
we do our own scholarship contest where the award is money. And that money, by the way, can't just be spent at Disneyland. It has to be used for music lessons or the purchase of a musical instrument or attending a summer music camp, something of that nature. We have ways of ensuring that it's spent appropriately.
Okay.
So we do that, and then we're involved with the Music Teachers Association of California South Bay branch in these Artists of the Future contests. So there's several different ways in which we're supportive of young people.
Now this is interesting. Cello is obviously a very, very popular, one of the popular string instruments in the public consciousness. I mean, everyone knows who Yo-Yo Ma is. He's a rock star.
Oh, yes, that's right. That's right. But what's interesting is, apparently piano is still one of the most popular instruments for students to take private lessons on.
Mm-hmm.
And for years, we didn't have a cellist.
Mm.
I mean, at least my first 15 years, we never had a cellist win or maybe not even audition. I mean, I'm not at these auditions, so I don't know how that works.
Yeah.
But we never had one. And so it's only like in the past 4 or 5 years that we've had cello soloists. It's just amusing how these things come and go.
Right, right.
Yeah, so most of the time it's piano and violin. 1 year we actually had 4 piano students with no violin or anything else.
Yes.
Right.
Wow.
And occasionally the other instrument we get is a flute. Mm-hmm. So last year I believe we had a flute player as well. And over the years we get flute players every so often, you know. But we've never had a clarinet soloist, we've never had a viola soloist or a trumpet soloist. It just hasn't happened. That's just life, you know,
right.
the quirks of things.
Right, right.
So this year we have 1 pianist and 3 cellists.
So how does this piece fit into the constellation of pieces that Saint-Saëns is renowned for?
This is one of his most famous.
Mm.
It's one of the most popular of the cello concertos of the entire repertoire. It's about 17 or 18 minutes long, the whole thing.
Mm.
We're just doing the third movement.
Mm.
But it's, you know, it's typical concerto, romantic concerto. It's in A minor, you know, very, very emotional, lots of contrast between the passionate opening and the melodic, slower middle theme, and then it kind of has a big splashy ending. But it's one of the most popular concertos for cello of all time.
Mm.
He has a few other pieces. I mean, we're all familiar with his Danse Macabre and the, what's his other famous thing? Introduction in Rondo Capriccioso.
Mm-hmm.
And next season, by coincidence, we will be performing his rather enormous organ symphony.
Ooh.
At our second concert in January. Yes, which is for large orchestra, organ, and whatnot. So he was very successful in his own time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm losing my voice here.
Yes. Yeah. Are we having an organ moved in for the concert?
Yes, except all you will see on stage is the console,
mm-hmm.
which is slightly larger than a piano, stand up a little higher. The mm-hmm. pipes are somewhere else in the auditorium.
Oh.
It's an electronic connection.
Yes, yes. Oh, boy, that sounds exciting.
Right, but we'll talk about that next January when we get close to that.
Yes,
right?
Yes. Now, I'm sorry, I don't have the third movement. I probably have the first movement.
Right. That's okay, because the third movement basically repeats the first movement.
Oh.
So everybody will get the same impression of the piece.
Okay. All right. Well, this is Saint-Saëns Cello Concerto Number 1. And here's a bit of it. Thank you. Wonderful piece. Looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm. And you'll get to hear that twice on Friday evening.
Yes. Okay. Wonderful. Right. You know, it is amazing to see these young people so focused on their careers. What's the state? You know, there's a lot of talk about various kinds of initiatives in the public schools and in schools in general and education in particular. What's the state of music education, do you think?
I think it's better than the public realizes.
Mm.
At least in Los Angeles, or I should say in California, back in 1978, we had Proposition 13,
right,
which changed many things. And that reduced some, because of property taxes, it reduced some of the income that went to music programs. And there are many people who still think, even though that's 30-something years ago, they still think that music was eliminated from the schools. It never was.
Mm-hmm.
It got reduced a little bit. And then a few years later, back in the 80s and into the 90s, there was more money, and it came back in. But the public doesn't perceive this. First of all, if your local elementary school has a program, but if you don't have a child in that school, you're not paying attention.
Right.
You know, we all have – our attention is spread out amongst many things, and if something doesn't involve us, we don't pay attention. So people don't realize how good or how much music – there is in the public schools. So without meaning to be too negative here, you get these people who are trying to copy El Sistema, you know, from Venezuela because of Gustavo Dudamel, and that's all very lovely. And people, and because that gets a lot of press, people think, well, now we've got something. They don't know these thousands of other students in all the school districts who are getting music. I mean, you know, this, in the South Bay, I personally know some teachers from Redondo Union School District and from some of the other school districts, and they all have very active, worthwhile programs.
Right.
That doesn't get the publicity that EOLA gets. Yes, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Also, I assume that a lot of parents are involved, both financially and otherwise.
It all depends what you're doing. For instance, if you're at an elementary school level, the school may own, or the school district may own instruments, and if your 8-year-old child signs up to play flute, you're not paying for the class. This instrument is being loaned to you.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get a little more, if the child becomes more serious about it, then you need to buy a better quality instrument that the, you know, for the student, and engage a private instructor. That's the only way to make real progress.
Mm-hmm.
But there are many students who do a perfectly reasonable job just playing it in the school themselves. If you want to become really proficient, like the four young people we have on this this week's concert, then you have to get into private lessons and your own instruments. But then these people are particularly dedicated. Right. We have to be honest. Most people who play instruments in school do not go home and practice 3 hours a day.
Right.
You know, these people do.
Right.
But then they, it's sort of, it's grabbed a hold of them, and they've decided to go after it. Whether they will go pursue this as a profession, that's not always the case, you know.
Now, it seems to me, and help me understand this from sort of the business perspective, but it seems to me, you know, there are many professions that young people can pursue that don't have a bright future, but the profession of professional classical music seems to actually have a bright future today because of all of the symphony orchestras that are clamoring for good players.
Well, it's a yes but situation. If you make it, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
But the our universities and conservatories turn out more wonderful musicians than there are openings for.
Right.
So, a little example. A number of years ago, there was an opening in the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra for a second violinist. I mean, it's a large orchestra. You know, and of course, the Metropolitan Opera is one of the best in the world, so they have the highest quality people. Well, 250 people applied for that.
Right.
So only one could got the job.
Right. Right.
So the LA Philharmonic has several openings for clarinet and cello or something. Only one clarinet player can get it, and one cello player can get it, no matter how many people apply for it. So if you are one of the lucky ones who gets a job like that, that's terrific. Then you get to immerse yourself in this wonderful music and this life for your whole career.
Right.
If you're not one of the lucky ones, and this is what happens the majority of the time, you end up putting together a career. If you're in Southern California, let's say, you'll play some in several different orchestras, you know, because you're freelancing. You will have private students. Perhaps you also teach at a college 1 or 2 days a week. And you sort of put it together that way, and you do some chamber music. You play string quartets or perhaps with an ensemble of Baroque music. And so you put together a career that way, which is a little more complicated and not entirely as secure as getting a job with the LA Philharmonic, where you have a, you know, a living wage and a benefit package and all of those kinds of pedestrian things, which are terribly important. You know.
Right.
But I know many musicians who sort of put it together, and in the end they have a gratifying artistic experience doing a variety of different things.
I'm encouraged by many of the things that I study, you know, small business development a great deal, and there are just so many opportunities out there for small businesses whereby it's simply a matter of the entrepreneur saying to themselves, I'm going to do this. Not is there enough money or you know, is there a market or anything like that, but just I'm going to commit to it. And I'm pretty sure that it's the same for a musician. If you really want to play, Des Moines, Iowa has a symphony orchestra you can play for, or God forbid.
I don't, but of course, Des Moines, Iowa, the cost of living isn't as high as Southern California.
Correct.
So you might, and that's not a major orchestra, you might be able to make a living wage. I don't know about that.
Right.
I don't know what their pay scale is in Des Moines. You know, but if you were in Las Vegas, you and there's a Las Vegas Symphony, you could not make a living wage just playing in that. You'd have to teach at the University of Nevada and perhaps play,
you know, blackjack weddings, or something?
Weddings and stuff like that. Excuse me?
Maybe you'd have to be a second or a first violinist and then also deal blackjack?
I would hope not. Yeah, that's a whole different life thing. Well, I mean, it was a big thing 40, 50 years ago. Musicians made terrific money in Las Vegas playing the shows.
Right.
Because every show there were like four big casinos back then, and each one of them had shows every night.
Right.
You know, so you could make really good money. Now it's all electronic.
Really?
Very few of them have live orchestras anymore. It's, you know, pre-recorded, or maybe they have four or five musicians plus electronic background or something.
Oh.
But the idea that you could move to Las Vegas and make a good living in the playing music in the casinos, that's gone.
Wow. That's a shame.
Yeah.
That's a shame.
Yeah, much has changed in the musical world over the past 50 years, you know. But still, lots of people have very satisfying careers and lives in classical music. I mean, it's just as difficult to make a career in rock and roll. How many people think they're going to be the next Mick Jagger, and it doesn't really work?
Right.
You know, it's like being the next Yo-Yo Ma. A few will get there. A few will play in orchestras, and a few will sort of struggle. It's just the nature of things, you know.
Right.
Like being a restaurateur. You know, you may have a great idea and some financial backing, but that's the most volatile business there is. Restaurants are always going out of business.
Right.
Because it's just the fluke of the thing, tastes change and whatnot. So in all areas, life is not perfect.
That's
we do the
great.
Best we can to make it work.
Well, it's time for us to take a station break, Barry. We'll be right back.
Terrific.
We'll be right back talking about the Beach Cities Symphony Orchestra, ladies and gentlemen, a treasure, a jewel of the South Bay. There's a performance coming up this coming Friday, the 29th, at the Marseille Auditorium at El Camino College. Please consider bringing your friends, your relatives, your neighbors. It's going to be a glorious night because of the program featuring four young people, artists of the future. It should be very, very exciting concert. The concert begins at 8:15, but if you get there at 7:30, you will be treated to a talk by Maestro Brisk about these pieces of music and potentially about the artists themselves, and so it's always a fun evening, and so I hope you will attend. Right now, we'd like to thank a sponsor. Our sponsor today is Viridian Solar, the official solar energy provider for the South Bay. Working with Solar City, Viridian provides an opportunity for a family to make a significant impact on the carbon footprint of our society. It turns out that the by far the greatest impact on your carbon footprint in a home is by installing solar energy on the home. And then if you install solar energy and get an electric car, it's a double whammy, and that is by far the biggest impact that you can have in reducing our carbon footprint on our planet. Free monitoring, free installation, free repairs for the life of the 20-year lease, and of course 20 years at one low rate for electricity, regardless of what energy prices do in general. Solar City is the installer. Viridian is the company. That's what we do. We intend to do with Solar City and Viridian is live, love, laugh, leave a legacy, and lower our carbon footprint. For the best value in solar, please visit. And, of course, I failed to mention, I have to work on this copy. It's a free. There's no cost for this lease. There's no cost whatsoever. You just pay for the energy that you're receiving. That's it. You're not paying for the lease of the equipment. So solar.greenenergyfire.com. That's solar. solar.greenenergyfire.com, as in a fire for green energy, which I certainly have. solar.greenenergyfire.com. So, Barry, we have one more soloist that we haven't talked about.
Yes, and he's our youngest soloist, Andrew Park. He's only 10 years old.
10 years old. Wow.
10 years old, and he plays... He will play the first movement of the Haydn C major cello concerto.
Mm.
So Haydn This is considered from his early period, and when you read about it, it says this was written when he wrote his first, you know, symphonies number 1 through 6 or something like that. But to show you how early that is, you have to remember that Haydn wrote 104 symphonies.
Right.
So, and he lived to be a fairly old man by those standards. He was in his mid-70s when he passed away.
Mm.
So this is early Haydn. It almost has a Baroque sound to it. A lovely piece. It was discovered by accident in a Prague library in 1961.
Mm.
So it hadn't been played for 200 years. And it's been published, of course, and it's gotten into the repertoire of all the, you know, great cello players of our time.
Mm.
My wife and I heard Lynn Harrell play it with the Philharmonic, L.A. Philharmonic, several years ago. And we've done it with student cellists several times over the past few years.
Mm.
So we're looking forward to that. So he's our youngest soloist, Andrew Park, for this particular concert.
Right. All right. Let's listen to a bit of Haydn. Thank you. Well, I could get lost in that piece there. And
That's a very wonderful, upbeat, charming piece.
And there was some very interesting work right there at the end with the cello. It's a
rather quick little scale passages there.
Yes. What is that called? Is there a name for that?
There's no technical term for it. It's just sort of scale passages. But it's not. The trick is when you're playing is not what the left hand does playing the different notes, but it's getting cleanly with the right hand, which controls the bowl.
Yeah.
So getting that, I can't sing it. On the radio, that would sound terrible. But making nice, clean, quick sounds with the bowl requires great bowl control.
Right. That was very nice, and looking forward to that. And it's Barry. It's something we do once a quarter, I guess, whenever the next concert comes. But it's always something that I want the audience, any new audience that hasn't heard us before, to know about. So tell us a little bit about the orchestra itself, how it's constituted, and how a volunteer orchestra works.
Well, let's see. First of all, this is the end of our 65th season.
Right.
So we've been around for a while. It was formed in 1949. We still have one player there, Bob Peterson, who was at the first rehearsal, and he's been playing second French horn for the whole time. A very charming man now, 94 years old.
94
still very
years.
Competent.
Yeah.
Very competent. Basically, we have volunteer players, as you say. That means people from the community who have learned to play an instrument when they were young, and they want to continue doing it. And it's a little bit lonely to play your clarinet in the bedroom by yourself, so you can join an orchestra like this, which we rehearse every Wednesday evening.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, it's 80% volunteers, and then to not just fill things out, but to help guide the volunteers, we have some professionals who come in. The concertmaster, Rebecca Rutkowski, who's been there for many years, is of course professional, and our principal cellist, and a few other people scattered throughout the orchestra to make sure things happen. But we can have 55 people at a given Wednesday evening rehearsal, volunteers who show up and do a good job. Now, of course, volunteers, like human beings of every flavor, come in a variety of ways. You have those who are really excellent on their instruments, those who are pretty good, and those who have to do a little more practicing to catch up.
Yeah.
So there's a variety of people with their skills. They are all very intelligent people, and being in the South Bay, many of them are very scientific. They're in computer fields, they're involved in aerospace, and a number of PhDs in the orchestra, so a former astrophysicist, to just mention one person. So we have a lot of very talented, multi-talented people in the orchestra. So it rehearses once a week, Wednesday evenings, and in the week of the concert, we have what we would call three services, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday.
Mm-hmm.
The following week, we take off, and then we start up again. But that won't happen now because we're coming up to our summer break.
Right.
But so that's the usual schedule. So we have about 8 rehearsals for each concert.
Mm-hmm.
The last two rehearsals, like this week, Wednesday and Thursday, are in the auditorium. Prior to that, we rehearse in the band room at Redondo Union High School.
Nice.
We have a relationship with the adult ed department, with the adult education department there. We are in the high school under their auspices. And, of course, that's the room where the high school band rehearses. So we have a fine relationship with Ray Vizcarra, the band director there. And I've gotten to know a number of the students from the school. So, everything just has to, shall we say, be in place and work smoothly.
Well, it's an amazing resource for us here in the South Bay, and it's wonderful that we have a Beach City Symphony. If you'd like more information, ladies and gentlemen, you can go to beach, Cities Symphony. There's two S's there in the middle, beachcitysymphony.org. Or you can call 310-379-9725. That's 310-379-9725. Or you can call 310-539-4649. That number, 310-539-4649. For general information, if you want to send an email, you can send an inquiry at beachcitysymphony.org. It's amazing, Barry.
Right. And in addition to the four soloists we have, we traditionally have like a concert opener, shall we say, an overture or something like that.
Mm.
And then we have a finale that we add, which are just for the orchestra to play alone.
Mm-hmm.
So on this concert, we're opening it with the prelude from the opera Aida by Verdi. It's
right.
A very gentle, soft, beautiful piece. Well, in the middle it gets a little loud, but it mainly has the gentle themes which are used to portray Aida herself.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end, we have, even though it's the end of our concert, we're playing an overture, Beethoven's Leonora Overture number 3.
Right.
So, and that's a big, boisterous is perhaps a less poetic word than to say an extravagant, glorious ending to the concert. Yes.
Well, let's hear a bit of, and I love pronouncing his first name, Giuseppe.
Like Giuseppe, which would be Joseph in English.
Yes. Okay. Fine.
So we could translate his name as Joe Green.
Joe Green, yes.
That's what Giuseppe Verdi means. Right.
But he's not mean. He's not mean Joe Green.
Definitely not. No.
No. No, he's Giuseppe Verdi. And this is the prelude from Aida. Wonderful. Here we go. Love to play more, but we're getting near the end of the show, Barry.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I just want to thank you again for doing this before every concert. We're going to be doing this for the duration, as long as I can keep doing this. I love doing it. I love, you know, giving the community something to hold on to, maybe to share neighbor to neighbor before Friday comes, so that they can all be prepared to really have a wonderful evening at the Symphony Orchestra.
Right.
It's wonderful. Thank you so much, Barry, for joining us again today.
Oh, it's always my pleasure. You know, it's important that everybody knows what's going on in their community, because every community has many things that people don't know about, and it enriches your lives to partake of these things.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it is, you know, there as you say, there's so many things that people can do, but this is worthy of their time. This is really worthy of their time, I think. As some things are and some things aren't, having your own symphony orchestra in the Beach Cities is certainly one of them. That's fabulous. What else can we say about this coming Friday?
Well, I think we've sort of done it. Once again, I'll just reiterate that the concert is free.
Yes.
However, parking is $3,
yes.
And you have to put to come with three $1 bills,
yeah,
because that's the way the machines take them. They will not give you change for a 10,
yeah,
and they do not take credit cards.
Yeah.
So sorry for that inconvenience. It's the parking lot that requests this, not the orchestra. So, you know, be prepared for that little amount. But other than that, we're there. We're delighted to have everybody come. The more, the merrier. A full house always makes everybody feel good. If there's only 20 people there, it's a little thin. But that never happens. We tend to have 600 to 800 people per concert. So, you know, it's a very lovely event. You can get coffee in the lobby beforehand and things like that. And there's a raffle. You can buy tickets and perhaps win some prize. So there's a variety of things that happen in addition to the specific performances.
Certainly true. And also, I have to take some time to ask about these meetups that I've seen. I've seen one in particular that was very successful where people...
Right. Well, if I'm low-tech,
yes,
so I've heard of this stuff.
Yeah.
And I know in general how it works,
yeah,
but I can't tell you anything specific. There are ways of hooking up with these meetup groups. I think you have to be a member of one to make
right
it work, and
right
then a group finds out about it through their own connections to a website, a meetup website, and then they all just show up.
Right.
So we've gotten into this recently, and that's been very nice because we get a different group of people coming who don't normally come to the concert.
Right.
Right.
Well, it was really, really exciting to see so many people with some commonality that they, you know, knew of each other, but then they're meeting at a concert.
Right.
It was I think that's a fantastic idea.
Oh yeah, we're very pleased with the results of that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Would love to see that, more of that. Well, I'm looking forward to the concert on Friday. I hope you all are out there in the audience. And we cannot shortchange the master. We cannot shortchange. We've got to give everyone just a little taste of the. It's Leonora Overture Number 3.
Leonora, right?
Leonora Overture Number 3. So this is being recorded, and it's not going out over the air, but most everyone listens in podcasts. So first of all, we have to say it's Beethoven, and let's listen to a bit of it.
Thank you.
All right. That's the exciting bit that you're going to be hearing on Friday. Well, again, thank you very much, Barry Brisk, conductor, Beach City Symphony Orchestra.
It's always a pleasure to be with you, Joe.
That's our show, ladies and gentlemen. We hope you'll join us on Friday at the Marseille Auditorium at El Camino College. Bye-bye now.